I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Rome and Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
Hey Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well Lynn, we're going to kick off the show with a lovely couple we met in Warrialda.
Yes, we did, at the Sale Yards campground.
Sale Yards rest area, yes. Bill and Di are their name. And what a fabulous little spot that Sale Yard rest area is. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, it's flats. There's a toilet. You're a short walk into Warrialda, 850 metres.
We were counting the steps, weren't we?
Yes. Yeah, there's an IGA there and a Mitre 10.
And there's a hotel.
Yes.
That's the most important thing. And there's a pie and a bread shop too there, isn't there?
I think there is. Yeah.
It's a great little town, Warrialda. And as Lynn said, 850 metres. Took 10 minutes, steady walk, 10 minutes easy. And you can stay there up to a week.
Yes, you can.
Now, you do have to have your own water and power, but they do have clean toilets.
Yes, they do.
Which is very, very important. So anyway, we met Bill and Di there, and they've been travelling now for over a year.
Yes, they packed up, left Wodonga, and they're on their way to Brandon, which is just out of Ayre. And they're going, well, Bill's going to be carting cane.
Yeah, well, Bill's an ex-truck driver.
Yes, he is.
So when he rang him up about the job, they within 2 days, they got back to him.
Wow.
And said, we would love to have you as part of our team. I think he's got about 6 months' work.
Yes, he has.
So it's the first work they've done. They've been travelling for over a year, and this is the first job they've decided to do. But they're saying, you know, we want to top up the funds. And
I guess
Bill wants to feel active because he's a pretty fit sort of a fella.
Yeah.
He's 71 years of age, I think.
Oh.
And an ex-truck driver, and what a character.
Mm.
Oh, my goodness. He tells us a little tale right at the end of it about mushrooming.
Oh, right.
And we don't mean picking mushrooms.
Oh, okay. Right.
It's a term that truckers use apparently if somebody's, you know, getting under their skin on the road and they want to give them a little bit of a nudge.
Okay.
Not physically give them a nudge, of course, but just let them know that, hey, you're doing the wrong thing. Get out of my way. Time's money.
Right.
And they call that mushrooming.
Okay.
So Di's not going to be working. She's just going to be kicking back and watching Bill bring in all the money.
Yep. Good on her.
Good on her. Absolutely fantastic. And then straight after that, we're going to be in Whitecliffs.
Yes, we are.
So I believe this is probably the
most... This is a must-see.
It is a must-see. It is the most interesting, attractive, brilliantly put together...
Dugout house.
It's a dugout house. I wouldn't call it an attraction.
No.
Because these two people that put this together, they actually live there. This is their home.
And they let you come through.
They do indeed. Now
they do tours, I should say.
Well, they do tours, but actually a tour bus does the tours. They don't really do the tours. They just allow you to go through their fabulous home. So the home is called The Dugout, and it is the home of Lindsay and Cree.
Yes.
So what would you say about Cree?
Oh, she is an amazing woman. She is an interior designer, a decorator, and she has done the house beautifully with her decoration. And some of her artwork, well, I don't want to give too much away, but it is something to see. Let me put in, you know, one little word, roadkill is featured, but not as you would have imagined.
Roadkill is featured, yes, but not as you would imagine, correct. So if she does find some roadkill on the side of the road, she takes it home, throws it in the cook pot, and she doesn't feed it to the tourists.
And it is a separate fry pan that she uses.
And a boiling pot. But what she does basically is she bleaches the skeletal remains.
And makes artwork out of it.
And turns it into artwork. And she also finds things on the rubbish tip.
Yes.
Things on the side of the road.
Barbed wire is another one that is just amazing.
She just virtually finds all these artifacts, I guess you could call them, for one of junk, rubbish.
And creates art.
And creates art.
And it's amazing.
And it is the most amazing place. And Lindsay, wow, what a... He's 70 years of age.
Yes.
And he's an extremely fit guy. This is like the seventh home that they built there in
Whitecliffs. Yeah, I think it was, yes.
So for all our people visiting Whitecliffs, the dugout is definitely a must-see. And straight after that, we are going to be in St. George.
Yes, which is in southeast Queensland.
Right. And we're going to be visiting the unique egg.
Yes, Stavros is his name, and he's an amazing guy. He's Greek, and he moved out to Australia and built a life here, and he whittles away at emu eggs and does magnificent carvings.
Whittle away is probably the best way to term it, because he just doesn't sit there and hack into them, does he?
No, he doesn't.
He says an egg can take up to 50 hours to make a carving. And he did say to me, you have to take it very slow and very carefully, because if you go too far, there's no reverse gear, quote unquote. But he's got the most incredible emu egg carvings, and he's got some of them that are lit up with lamps and lights.
Yep.
And he's had some incredibly interesting people visit the shop as well.
Yes, he has.
Okay. So if you are interested in emu eggs and what you can do with an emu egg.
Or something to do in St. George.
Or something to do in St. George, because the store, the emu egg, it's situated next to Steve Jean's coffee shop in Victoria Street.
That's the main street.
That is the main street, and it's for over 60 years, Steve or Stavros Margaritis, that's his surname, he's been handcrafting the emu eggs in a variety of designs. Now, his inspiration in the craft comes from his early childhood years back in Greece, as you said, because he comes from Greece, where he remembers shepherds in the bush carving from wood. Now, as a kid, he broke a glass bottle, which was the very first thing that he used for his carving.
Oh, okay. Fascinating.
Fascinating stuff.
But he will tell you stories while you're there in the shop.
Oh, look, he's a character, isn't he?
He is, yes.
He's a character, and he's got some extremely interesting stories to tell, and it is definitely a must-see. It's only $5 to get in.
Yep, just a donation,
yep.
But nothing is for sale.
No, not unless you offer him large amounts of money.
Yeah.
All right, Lynn. So enough said about Bill and Di, Stavros and White Cliffs. And I think apart from all this fabulous information, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
And our first special guest, folks, and there's two of them this time, it is Di and Bill. And we met these two at the Warriolda Sheepyard Rest Area, and they're now in Gingin. They've been on the road for over a year. How are you guys going?
Yeah, real well.
Good on you. Now, I wanted to talk to Di first of all, if I can, Bill, if you don't mind. Ladies before gentlemen, age before beauty and all that sort of stuff. Although, actually, you're probably older than her, aren't you? I said that wrong, didn't I?
Yes, you did. He's got 7 years on me.
Okay, well, let's just forget the age before beauty then. Let's just go with the beauty. Di, you've been travelling now for over a year on the road with Bill.
Yes.
Now, you had to sell up everything. Well, you didn't have to, but you chose to. So, what was it like for you? Daunting? Sell up everything, go into a caravan, hit the road. Tell us a little bit about your feelings and your anxiety, I guess, of doing it.
Well, the hardest part first was having to come to terms with being away from my mum, who's elderly.
Mm-hmm.
She's in a nursing home, so I had to come to terms with not being able to see her as often as I did. And so that took me a good couple of years to be comfortable with that. And knowing that I won't see her. So, and knowing that she was happy and settled and all that sort of thing. So that was the first thing. And then we didn't own our home, we just rented, so that was the easy bit. But having to get rid of all our goods and chattels,
yes,
and having to decide what we could and couldn't take with us, because obviously in a caravan you're very, very limited.
Mm-hmm.
So it had to go through all the Tupperware container cupboard, and as any other woman out there will understand that, and having to decide, plates and that sort of thing, and going through clothes and knowing you can only take 5% of what you own, and all that sort of thing. So that was a little bit of a challenge, having to downsize into a smaller van and getting used to a very small bed.
Okay.
After having a king-size bed. So, and just going away from what you've known for 25 years and you know, the familiar town and your routine and your friends and neighbours. So it took a little while to deal with all that and then make a decision I could do it.
Fair enough. But I guess the decision would have been made easier because Bill's an ex-truck driver, aren't you, Bill?
Yes, I am.
So was it your idea to hit the road, Bill? Was it you? Because you said like you were a little bit older than Di, and you just thought, I've had enough of truck driving, but you're still driving. You've been driving for over a year now.
I had enough of truck driving, and we're driving not every day, and we only do maybe 3-4 hours at the most of a day, so it's not a big task.
Yes. And you're getting to go where you want to go rather than where somebody wants to send you.
Exactly right.
So tell us some of the places you've been. You've been travelling now for over a year, is that right?
Yeah, we've been all through Victoria, New South Wales, over the top of part of New South Wales, across to South Australia.
Okay.
Through South Australia, into Western Australia.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Across to the Territory. Back down to Queensland,
right.
Down to Victoria, and now we're back up to Queensland.
Back up to Queensland. So you're heading to Brandon, I understand.
Yeah, I've managed to score a job up there for the cane season, just hauling out cane.
Okay. So was that something that you wanted to do because you're retired? Was it something you thought, I want to do this to top up my funds, or I just want to do it because I want to feel like I just want to be doing something again, a bit more routine? Because you'd be doing that every single day, wouldn't you, the cane job?
Yeah, we'll be doing that for about 6 months, you know, like for 6 days on, 2 days off.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And we need to top up our funds again so we can keep driving.
Okay. So you're obviously going to continue doing this for some time. Is this the first job you've decided to look for in the 12 months you've been on the road?
Yes. First one we look for, yep.
Okay. So was it easy for you to find? How'd you go about finding it? Because there are a lot of people out there travelling, and some of them say, hey, I'd like to be able to pick up some work. I mean, was it word of mouth? Did you look it up on a website or something? How'd you go about finding the job?
A friend of mine put me onto it, and we rung the company, and they got back to me within 2 days.
Uh-huh.
And they've been more than accommodating for what we want.
Right, right.
So we can put the caravan on their property and leave it there and free of charge, and
fabulous. So free accommodation as well as getting paid to do it.
That's it.
What a sensational idea. So did you manage to get Di a job as well? Is she going to be like a shearer's cook up there? What's Di going to be doing?
Like the bloody shearers. Hopefully I'll find some work in maybe a cafe or something in Brandon or Ayr, which is only 5 kilometres up the road.
Fair enough.
Yeah, or something like that. But there's plenty of websites you can go to on Facebook too that you can find jobs on. So the Grey Nomads have a page that you can check out jobs, and then there's lots of jobs while you're travelling, that sort of thing. So it's not hard to find a job. You just got to get onto the websites and look for them that way.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Now, I know you're also travelling with a little four-legged fur baby. How does your little four-legged fur baby cope with being in the caravan all day and in the car all day when you are travelling and on the road?
She puts up a bit of a performance every now and then. Uh-huh. Normally she's not too bad.
Okay. So you wouldn't want to travel without her then?
No, no way.
She's got both of us and our undivided attention, so she's pretty happy.
She's the star of the show.
Yeah, she certainly is.
Fair enough. Now, I want to ask you a question, Bill. You being an ex-truck driver, because I know there's a bit of rivalry between truck drivers and caravanners and motorhomers. I mean, I have my UHF on open scan, and I hear quite a lot of arguing between truckers and caravans. Have you had any sort of experiences when you were driving trucks with caravanners?
Oh, I certainly have. I mean, to say now I'm one of them.
Yes.
I know all the bad habits that they've got.
Okay.
Like driving along, you'd be driving along the road, especially going across the Western Australia, across the Nullarbor. They'll be cruising along at their 80 kilometres an hour. You come up behind them doing 100 kilometres an hour. They see you. They start to panic. They duck off into the gravel, hit the brakes. You've got oncoming traffic. You can't get round them. You just about run over the top of them. And then all of a sudden they keep going again.
Right.
And all you do is just call them up and say, look, you keep doing your 80 kilometres an hour.
Yep.
And when it's safe, I'll come round you. No need to throw stones at me.
but I guess some of them do. They see this massive monster of a machine behind them, and I know because you got to keep your momentum going, and you're not doing anything dangerous. You're not trying to intimidate. You're just trying to keep that momentum up so when you do have an opportunity, you can get around them quick and easy. But some of them do have a tendency to panic. So, but you've had no real hairy situations with anybody or anything that that's just the local sort of stuff. People panic and move across.
Yeah, and I was travelling between Forbes and West Wyalong. I'd had a bit of a yahoo with a bloke. He was doing a caravan, towing a caravan. He had an F-250 V8, and he was cruising along at about 70 kilometres, 75. Got up behind him, went to overtake him. And I had Di with me at the time. I was driving the cab over at that stage and got halfway past him, looked in the side mirror, and there he is right beside me doing 100 kilometres an hour.
Oh, wow. That's dangerous.
And I got oncoming traffic, so I had to back off, go back in behind him, waited till I picked up speed again, got a bit of a straight run, got up around him again. He did the same thing again.
Jeez, that's dangerous.
So I've just ducked in behind him again. The third time I said to Di, I said, that's it. I said, as soon as I get up beside him, I'm going to put my indicator on. I said, I'm going to send him mushrooming.
Mushrooming? What's mushrooming?
No, I send him bush.
But you didn't literally send him bush. You just gave him a stir because when he saw the blinker on, he probably thought, Christ, this guy's going to come across. He obviously would have had to have backed off, wouldn't he?
That's exactly what he did. He realised what when he saw the indicator and Di waving at him.
Yes.
Because I said, you know, and then when I got up past him, he gets on his UHF, calls me up and he said, oh, I'm going to ring the police because you just run me off the road and rah, rah, rah. And I said, mate, you're a bit late.
Yep.
I said, I've already rung the coppers in West Wyalong. I said, they're waiting for you.
Crikeys. So he was obviously just been that's a very dangerous manoeuvre, accelerating while you got a big truck trying to overtake you.
So I just said to Di, I said, I'm just going to send him mushrooming.
Mushrooming. Send him into the bush. Get him off the road.
Yep.
Well, at least he had the good sense to back off and let you get past him without him having to physically send him into the bush to teach him a lesson, because that could have been dangerous.
Put it this way, he didn't have much choice because I was starting to move over and he realised he's going to run out of road.
Yeah, fair enough. We can't have that sort of behaviour between, trucks and caravanners and vice versa. The road's out there for all of us to use. And a UHF radio makes it so easy. I've got one in the truck. As I said, mine's always on open scan. And if I see a truck coming up behind me, I'll talk to them on the UHF for a little bit, you know, just tell them who I am and introduce myself and say, look, There's a straight stretch coming up here now. If you're ready, you can, because I've got a fifth wheeler, so it's not easy to see around me. There's a straight stretch up here. If you want to wind her up, and you can get around me, and that's it. They go on their way and often thank us or flash their blinkers a few times, and no danger, no nothing, no malice, and everybody's happy, and that's the way it should be.
That's I've got a UHF in my car, and one comes up behind me. I'll either put the right-hand indicator on if it's clear for him to come round, or I'll call him up,
come past me,
I'll lift my foot.
Yep.
And it only takes 2 seconds to lift your foot and he's past you.
He's past you, exactly. All right. Well, this is the way it needs to be done, Bill, and I hope you haven't learnt from any of those bad caravanners. I mean, you were a truck driver in your past, so if you see a truck behind you, you don't fly into the verge and come and shower them with stones.
But also another trick is when you get to an overtaking lane.
Yep.
You're doing 100 kilometres and they're doing 90. You think, well, I'm going to put the boot in and get round him on the overtaking lane.
Yep.
The next thing, you can't blow wind up their freckle.
Yep.
You know, so And as soon as you get past the overtaking lane, they slow down again.
Yeah, look, I don't understand it. I mean, whenever I see a truck, I always would prefer the truck to be in front of me and gone. Time's money to truckers, and they don't have time to muck around. And us travellers, we've got all the time in the world. So I would hope that, you know, if you see a truck there, you do your best to let him get around you, not do the best you can to try and obstruct him or slow him down.
Because
it's just it's not necessary. And yeah, let him go. Let him go, listeners. If they're behind you, just let them go because they're going to sit on 100 and you're not.
That's right. We only cruise along at 90 kilometres an hour or so.
Yes.
You know, and it's no big drama. It's no big drama to slow down for 2 seconds to let them past.
No. And most caravanners sit on between 85 and, you know, 90. That seems to be the optimum speed, the best fuel consumption for us all. So trucks sit on 100. We're sitting on 85, 95. Let them go. They've still got a bit more herbs to get past you. And you're not going to sit on 100 all day anyway. So let the trucks do what they need to do.
That's exactly right.
Bill Dye, I'm going to wind this up and... Is there a favourite song I can play for you guys? Australian, has to be Aussie. Anything at all, any genre, can be rock and pop and country and western, whatever you want.
Akka Dakka, Highway to Hell.
Highway to Hell.
Yeah, well, we've been on the highway and we've seen a lot of hell.
Oh, geez. Would you agree with that, Di?
Yes.
So...
I'll be... very cleanly with my words and just say yes.
So if you knew then what you know now, and when Bill says, let's go and hit the road, would you go, no, because that's a highway to hell, or would you go, let's do it, Dar, while we're still young enough to enjoy it?
Yes, I would still do it, but maybe just, you know, do things slightly, some things slightly differently, but no, still do it. It's well worth the experience, and I've seen so much and met some lovely people and seen so much of this wonderful country. You know, you're only here for the once around the block, so you might as well enjoy it while you can.
Absolutely. Agree with you 100%. Guys, I'm going to have to wind this up now. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I met you at the Warrioldi Sheepyard rest area, and here we are now. You're at Gingin. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep us posted of your journeys, and if you have any interesting stories to tell us, just let us know, and we'll do this all again.
All right, then, Bill.
We'll do that, Phil.
Good on you, Bill. That's Bill and Di, folks. They've been permanently travelling for over a year now and having a ball of it, making some wonderful friends along the way. Got themselves a job. They're doing it, living the dream, and we're going to play their favourite song now. It kind of reminds them of the last 12 months, ACDC's Highway to Hell. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.
Take out everything! Hello, listeners. Phil C here.
And I'm Lynn.
And this is Roaming Oz. And we are in White Cliffs.
Yes.
And who are we chatting with, Lynn?
We're chatting with Lindsay and Cree.
Right.
And they have a house that's been dug out.
Tell us all about this dug-out house of yours, Lindsay.
Well, White Cliffs is a very hot place.
Right.
And years ago, the miners, and they said that there was something like 3,000 people here at one stage.
Right.
Found that the extreme heat of 50 degrees, the best place, the coolest place, was underground.
Okay.
That sounds
so
great.
Subsequently, they started living underground.
Okay.
And then us modern people have changed it from a cave into like a gallery.
Well, you wouldn't expect, we haven't seen down the house down under yet, the dugout, but to look at the where we're sitting, you've got tiled floors,
yep.
You've got glass windows everywhere, you've got this huge tree trunk with a big burl on it. This is a magnificent looking home from here, your huge book collection behind you. You wouldn't expect that, well, I can't imagine. What does downstairs look like? Is it going to look like this down in the dugout, or is it just going to be dusty and...
It's actually straight in. You don't walk downstairs.
You don't walk downstairs?
It's like walking into a cave.
Walking down. Oh,
and so, I guess it looks like this.
So that clump of dirt that we saw out there, the rocks and everything, you just dug
That's
straight into that. Right.
That
okay.
is the roof. And whose idea was it? Was it yours, Lindsay, to come up with this creation?
Yeah, this... Cree's an interior designer.
Right.
And so she's got plenty of good ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm just the little worker. But what we do here is we cut the side of the hill away.
Right.
And then we put this piece out the front. And the reason that we put this piece out the front is for rainwater.
Okay.
Right.
Because that the town water has chemicals in,
uh-huh.
which is required by law, which we don't like drinking chemicals. So when you build one of these underground houses, the first thing you do is put a roof out and collect the rainwater.
Okay.
Then when we walk into that house there, mm-hmm. we're already 20 feet underground.
Wow. Okay.
And I think when you go through there, which will take you through, you will just be blown away.
Do you have a feeling of claustrophobia with
well,
it?
You will answer that.
Oh, right, okay.
You won't feel that at all.
You won't?
But when you're in there and you're so secure
yep.
and the ground is so hard, it's harder than concrete.
Right.
The old timers, this area was an old mine, another 30 feet under our feet here. But they couldn't dig this level because it was too hard.
Right.
If you take a pick in there, rush at the wall, it will bounce off.
Oh.
That's how hard. It took me a year and a half
really?
Just to dig the rooms of this. And then 5 years ago, we started coming here and furnishing it,
yep.
And so we've probably got another 2 or 3 years to finish the place.
Wow. Oh, okay.
But this is number six that we've done here.
Number six?
In White Cliffs.
Mm.
So you've sold the other five?
Well, we've still got a couple of them,
yep.
But the others have been sold. Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Right. So how long have you been here, Lindsay?
I've been here 55 years.
Okay.
I'm 75 now, and Cree's the same. We're both 75 years of age.
Uh-huh.
But I came from Geelong, and Cree originally came from New Zealand.
Oh.
So what was the attraction of White Cliffs at 20? Did you think, I'm coming out here and I'm going to strike it rich with opal? What brought you to White Cliffs?
I came up here as a wool classer.
Okay.
I walked into White Cliffs one red hot day. It was 50 degrees, and I went into the shop, and I was talking to a lady in there who had an underground art gallery.
Right.
And all her dentures were done in opal.
Oh,
really?
So she was a wonderful character,
uh-huh.
and invited me to come into the dugout.
Yeah.
And I walked into that dugout. It was 20 degrees, cool, amazing. And I said, "How do you get one of these places?" She said, "Just go and put 4 steel pegs anywhere you like on the side of the hill where you can dig a house. Send $25 a year to the Lands Department, and it's yours." So not having much money.
Yep.
I borrowed a pick, a wheelbarrow and a shovel and then built the first house.
Wow.
And what was that, just one room or...?
It was actually quite a big place. It had something like 16 rooms.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
16?
To one person.
Yeah.
A B&B,
yeah.
Underground.
It was never a B&B, but, you know, just a home. And,
16 rooms, though.
And the first one that I built it as you... drove into the hill, and then I put like a big centre pillar in front of me.
Yes.
And then made a big room, a big circular room around that pillar.
Yep.
And then off that circle was all the other rooms. So it was like a big wagon wheel. Inside the house. Yeah.
So in winter, do you need heating here, or is it just
constant temperature?
Constant temperature.
It drops to about 18 degrees.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays up around the 20 degrees now in summer.
Right.
So 2 degrees, but when you're sleeping at night, unlike a house where the temperature drops and you've got to pull another blanket on, you won't have that trouble here underground.
Really? Okay. So you do tours here daily. The bus tour comes around you have people. How do you feel about having people coming in, you know, every day? Do you feel like you've got to keep the house clean, wash the floors, do the dusting?
Well, we've virtually found ourselves with friends taking them through anyway.
Yep.
So we just made a time that if there was any other people in the town, that we would take them through too. So because people were wanting to see what we're doing.
Yep.
And people come to White Cliffs for the Opal, and they come to White Cliffs to see an underground home, because there's only two places virtually in Australia where you can go underground.
Yes.
Here in Kippa Peggy.
Yeah.
So it's pretty unique.
Mind you, we did do an underground home in Kippa Peggy, I think.
No, we did a church.
We did a church, didn't we? But nothing like this. I mean, this is magnificent. Oh my God. Pretty impressive.
So what's the population of White Cliffs?
99. You could be the 100 or the 101.
We might have to talk to to Lindsay about selling us one of his other homes. So when you came here at 20, did you do mining or no?
Oh yes, I used to come in every weekend.
Okay.
But when you're digging your home, you find opal too.
Of course.
So, you know, like you're sort of doing two things.
Two things at once.
There's a thing about opal that when you see it, you're the first person in the world to see that opal.
Yes.
And it can be so beautiful.
Uh-huh.
It's Australia's national gem.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it really does. It just gives you a great, you know when you find opal that it's worth money.
Mm.
But that's not the thing. It's the hunt and the excitement of actually finding, and you're the first person to see it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. You know.
So you don't feel like you want to just keep going and going and going?
Oh, yeah, you do.
Oh, you do?
You do.
So once you find that one piece, you feel like...
Oh, you're hooked.
Yeah,
it's like probably fishing or whatever other people do in activities. It's something that gets you.
Yeah.
And then you're like the blokes down the hotel, and they put their hand in. Look at it. And it's very exciting.
Oh, okay. So you've obviously made enough out of it to do things and make jewellery.
You're not making much money out of it. I mean, to show this place here, how many lights do we turn on, crew?
About 50.
Oh, really?
No, come on, be serious. I think it's 82. And so by the time you pay your electricity bill and your time, you just do it for love, virtually.
82 lights.
So speaking of electricity, do you have any solar energy here?
Have solar and we run the house on rainwater as well.
Okay.
We've got big tanks under the shed and stuff down both sides. So we just cook and do everything with rainwater.
So what is the average rainfall out here?
200 mil a year. Like Sydney get that in 5 minutes lately.
Oh, yes. Yeah, indeed.
8 inches. 8 inches in the old scale, 200 mil in the...
And that keeps you going?
Yeah, if you collect it.
As long as you've got a big area.
Yeah, when we get up top, when we take you through and we go up the staircase and go up top, you'll see the extent of the roof area that I've got here.
Oh, okay.
And that provides us with our rainwater.
Impressive.
Very indeed. So, the town of White Cliffs, how did it get its name?
I don't, to be honest. I have no idea, but I would say because of these three hills here and the shedding on the side of the hills of the white sandstone, as you're coming from the west towards White Cliffs or coming in from the north, in the summer, you can see this white shimmer in the distance.
Yep.
So it just looks like cliffs, possibly like the White Cliffs of Dover on a boat or something.
Yep.
So I dare say that somebody said, oh, we're going down to the White Cliffs. And I think that would possibly be the reason.
Okay.
Interesting.
Interesting, yes.
Okay.
And do you have any idea how old the town of Wycliffe is? Like, when was it first settled or established?
It's around 1884, somewhere just before the 1900s.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we're getting well over the whole 100 years.
So do you know that when it first sort of became established and people realised there was opal here, were there a lot of people here? Because you've got a population now of 91. Do you have any idea, would there have been thousands of people here gouging for opal back then, or no?
This is the first commercial opal field in the world.
Right.
And when these kangaroo shooters actually picked these stones up and sent them to Adelaide to a friend and found out it was opal,
mm-hmm.
within about 10 years there was 3,000 people here.
Okay. Mm.
And so you can imagine that water, there's no water in this area.
Mm. No.
So every bullet train, and they tell me that there was 5 camel or bullet trains between Wilcannia, the river,
yep.
and Whitecliffs, which is 100 k's away,
mm-hmm.
on that road every day. And half their load would have been water or beer or something, with a bit of tin and, you know, some wine and food. But yeah, that kept the population going. And there was a lot of German people come here because that was where we were selling our opal to.
Right.
And they came across. And then when the war started, those people were either sent away or you know, just... So the whole place declined over the years till the stage now we've got about 100 people in the town.
Wow.
So you capture your own water. What does the town do for water?
We have a huge dam out to the north of here.
Right.
That was organised originally by an engineer that did the Broken Hill water supply and then went on through here to Sydney Harbour Bridge.
Okay.
And we've, touch wood, never run out since.
Never ran out of water.
Yeah, so we've got town water, we've got town electricity, but a lot of people here run on rainwater and solar power.
Solar power.
We have the first solar power station in the world here,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty unique, used to run the town.
Yep.
It's now decommissioned, but we're going to get the whole thing going again for tourism.
Yes.
Right. Hmm. So the town of Wycliffe's population is 91. You just mentioned tourism. Do you get a lot of tourists at Wycliffe?
Look, in the heat, in the summertime, for possibly 4 months, you're lucky to see half a dozen people
a
week.
Uh-huh.
Come through here.
Yep.
But from sort of Easter onwards and school holidays, a lot of families bring their children here and they go fossicking out in the field and find some beautiful stuff too.
Okay.
So it's a real family place here because the kids can be kids. It's not like in the city they haven't even got a backyard. Out here we've got a huge backyard.
Yeah.
And one thing about being out here, unless you're definitely on full Telstra, you've got no phone, no internet, you've got nothing. It's like you're in the third world.
No, we just use smoke signals.
Yeah. Smoke signals?
Yeah.
And war drums?
Oh, yeah.
And war drums. All right, look, we're going to have to wind this up, Lindsay Cree. Thank you so much for inviting us into this beautiful home.
Yep.
We haven't yet seen the underground section. We can't wait to see that. We're just going to wind this up. Now, we're going to play your favourite song. Now, you've left this up to us because you've got so many, you couldn't choose one. So I'm thinking, Lynn, what do you think about Men at Work's Down Under?
Yeah, I think that sounds quite appropriate, seeing the house is under.
Under, ground. Down under. Thank you so much for your time, Lindsay and Cree.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cree's sitting there. She's a little bit shy, Cree, but that's fine. We'll be back with more Roaming Oz listeners straight after Men at Work's Land Down Under.
Freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A women go and men plunder. Can't you hear the thunder? Take cover.
size, 6'4" and full of muscle. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land, 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 land. Read us low and mention her.
This is Raymond Oz, and my name is Phil C, and we are in St. George at the Unique Egg. And I'm chatting with Stavros, the owner of the Unique Egg. How are you today, Stavros?
Well, I'm a little bit dizzy.
A little bit dizzy?
And I put it down to a cloudy dust, a day.
Cloudy day. Cloudy days make you dizzy.
Maybe.
Fair enough.
But I had a hell of a night's kangaroo shooting.
Yes.
And always have a sleep at daytime.
Okay.
And every Tom, Dick and Harry wants anything, I could never say no.
Okay.
If I was a Sheila, I would have been always pregnant.
So how long have you been in Australia, Stavros? You're originally born in Greece. How long have
Since
you been here?
Since January 1954.
1954,
My
okay.
uncle had the old Greek cafe here.
Right.
I come here for 2 or 3 years, and I'm still here.
Okay. So, Stavros, tell us a little bit about the eggs. How did you get into carving them, and why? What was the reason for it?
Well, when our village got burned and all this, we used to have sheep, goats, donkeys,
mm-hmm.
and we went bush, live in caves.
Okay.
And we used to, you know, milk and everything.
Yes.
You go on. And shearers and drovers used to do woodwork carving. There's a little walking stick up there.
Yes.
In there?
Yeah.
And us kids, we had no knives to carve. We used to break the bottles and do woodwork carving.
Okay.
Perfect. And when I come here, found my first egg, I break a bottle with the glass and I carve my first egg.
Okay.
And out in the bush when we sitting white and shooting, peg the skins out and all this. The emus having coming around and all this. If you just move slowly, they come from here to there. You give them something to eat, they never leave you.
Okay.
The female bird lays the egg. The male one sits on them between 52 up to 56 days. No food, no water. It can last till the eggs are hatched out. You look after the young ones till they grow up too.
Right.
Nature put 2 to 3 kilos of oil there.
Okay.
Not fat like that.
Not fat in the tummy. So they put the oil in the back, and that's what keeps the bird alive to survive for the time.
That's right.
Okay. So how long does it take to carve an egg?
30, 40 hours.
30 or 40 hours?
Up to 50, some of them.
Okay. Depending on the thickness of the egg or what it is you're trying to get from the egg, what makes one egg 50 and another 30?
It is what you carve on.
Okay.
Like everyone, some of them, you go... Now, when you carve the egg, you throw away material and you find the colours. If you happen to go a little bit too far, you're not supposed to, no reverse gear, no. You spoil it. And that makes you think.
Now, you said that each egg is unique and each you can get many different colours from the eggs.
Mm.
And is that because of the depth that you have to carve or...?
Yeah, the different depths.
Okay.
Now, when... The female bird lays the egg, the male one sits them. Why she goes, she play around with other birds,
yes.
Come back and keep laying. So the eggs are same mother, different fathers.
Ah. So from a different father or a different male emu, that will produce a different colour? Or?
Well, older bird lays darker colour eggs, bigger and so, yeah.
Okay, okay. Now, I understand that your... daughter, Panoraya, if I've said that correctly, she now is carving eggs. You've when taught her the art of carving the eggs?
I didn't taught her. She you was didn't? Here blown to just look it and she done it.
Oh, really?
That's it.
So she just, you didn't have to teach her anything? She
no,
just
she no? was watching what I was doing.
Okay. So when you go to fly with the angels, Panoraya should be taking over and continuing the tradition of the unique eggs.
Yes, and Panoraya, the name Panoraya is my grandmother's name in okay. Greece.
Okay.
And it means above beautiful.
Okay. So what about Haley? Now, Haley's just wandering over here. She's showing us the family photographs. Haley, what is it that you actually do in the shop?
I'm just customer service.
Okay, customer service.
And I give a little spiel about the eggs.
Okay.
To the people, yeah.
Okay, so is there anything you can tell us about the eggs as looking at it from a customer's point of view or a person coming in to visit? Because it is actually a gallery, isn't it?
It surely is a gallery,
and
yes.
And the eggs aren't really for sale, and it's a $5 entry for the gallery. So I guess you take the people through the gallery?
Yes, so I... Greet people, give them a little spiel, tell them just to give them a little bit of an idea of what they're looking at,
mm-hmm.
and then they go through and you can take photos and everything else.
Okay, fabulous. So what can you tell the listeners, what can they expect to see when they come to the Unique Egg?
Well, when you come to see the Unique Egg, you can expect to see a gallery of over 250 carved and illuminated emu eggs.
Okay.
And they're all mostly carved by Stavros. There is, I think it's like 12 out there that are Panoraya's.
Yes.
So basically my spiel is just telling you, explaining that each one's unique to its own colour, texture and size, as Stavros was just saying before.
Yes.
And then within each shell you can get 8 to 10 layers of natural colours.
Okay.
And then I just show you... his first original egg, which is this one here.
Right.
That he did back in 1954.
Okay.
He also did that one with, he broke a glass bottle and okay. used a bit of glass to carve
so
that
carve
one.
Carve that one, yeah.
And this one here is what gave him the idea for the light.
For the lights?
He put a candle behind there, saw that the light brought the colour out, and that's when he began illuminating them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fabulous. And he's also got a book here, Stavros, A Unique Man, the only self-taught artist of his kind in the world. Now, what can we expect to see if somebody bought that book, for example?
Well, within that book, it's basically his biography.
Okay.
Gives you a little bit of history back in Greece. Shows when I read it, I knew he was cheeky. But it wasn't until I read the book that I found out how cheeky he was.
How cheeky he is.
Yeah.
He's looking a little cheeky over there, isn't he?
He is. You never know what to expect.
You never know what's going through his mind.
No, definitely not.
Fabulous. All right, well, I'll go back to Stavros now. Stavros, we're going to have to wind this up in a moment, my friend. It's been a pleasure talking with you and learning so much about your fabulous craft. And it's great that you've got Panaraya to continue on with the business of carving eggs. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Same to you from us.
Okay, fabulous. All right, now we're back to you, Hayley. I've got to play an Australian song, okay? We always play Australian music after each chat, each interview. Do you have a favourite song we might be able to play for you?
Old Man Emu by...
Johnny Williamson. Yes. All right, fabulous choice, and I can understand why you selected, Hayley. We're at the Unique Egg Listeners. This is Phil C, Raymond Oz, and we'll be back with more of this straight after Johnny Williamson's Old Man Emu.
Let me tell you of an interview with an old man emu. He's got a beak and feathers and thing, but the poor old letter ain't got no wing. Aren't you jealous of the wedge-tailed eagle? Ba-da-da-da-da-da. While the eagle's flying around and around, keeping 2 feet firmly on the ground. Now I can't fly, but I'm telling you. He can't fly, but I'm telling you. Reckon on the pants of a kangaroo. Swerve and toss like an albatross. Silly galarum, better by father. What cockatoo or a budgerigar? They squeak and squawk and try and talk. Why, me and them's like teeth and talk. But I don't know. He can't fly, but I'm telling you, we can run the path of a kangaroo. Well, a dingo came around one day. Hey there, emu, wanna fly? But the emu was too smart for him. Walked right up and kicked him in the shin. He can't fly, but I'm telling you, he can run the pants of a kangaroo. Well, the last time I saw old man, he was chasing a female he knew. As he shot past, I heard him say, she can't fly, but I'm telling you. She can't fly, but I'm telling you. She can run the pants till I can go. Well, there is a moral to this ditty. Thrush can sing, but he ain't pretty. Duck can swim, but he can't sing. Nor can eagle on the wing. If you can't fly, but I'm telling you, he can run the pants of a kangaroo. Well, the kookaburra laughed, and he said, it's true.
There you go, listeners. That is Johnny Williamson with his classic Old Man Emu. I'm going to just play you one more track before we wind up this afternoon's episode of Roman Oz, okay? And this is another Johnny Williamson classic. It's a song called, and it gets requested heaps, Old Farts in Caravan Parks.
Oh, happy travels are we, around Australia in a caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. And king of the road are we. Up a mountain road we wind, with a mile of traffic stuck behind. Too friendly a folk you wouldn't find. Oh, cheery old chooks away. We've hit the road and sold a home, like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. And a pair of toilers are we. We'll pick fruit or prune a tree. Any old job doesn't worry me. It'll cover our fuel and the camping fee. Ah, frugal old farts, oi. And a dear old chook of you, in your terry toweling dressing gown, the one you bought in a country town. Yours is pink and mine is brown. Threadbare old farts, oi. Yes, I've hit the road and sold the home, like a pair of drovers round we roam. No more winter and no more foam. We're wild and fancy free. Oh, geez, we'll have to pull up again soon, darling. And a tidy little unit away. Everything has a place to be. A jar of coffee and a tin of tea. A life or two, but not for three. Oh, sexy old tarts away. And we always camp just near the loo, cause I have to go at midnight too. And dribble, 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 dribble's all I do. Oh, over the hill are we. Oh, happy campers are we. Australia in the caravan. The kids are gone, we have no plan. You navigate, I'm your engine man. Yes, happy campers are we. Go around. Go around. And the same to you too, sonny.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.